Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech, driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Alexis Fink and Emily Hudson.
Hello, I'm Alexis Fink.
And I'm Emily Hudson.
And welcome to Intel on AI. Today, our guest is Radha Basu, CEO and founder of iMerit. Radha, thank you so much for joining us today. We'd love you to start off by telling us a little bit about iMerit and particularly your role and thought process in starting that company.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on this podcast. So the way that iMerit really came into being is we looked at the fact that there's just massive amounts of on-target data that's the lifeblood that is needed to expedite AI technology from lab to production. And as we looked at a lot of this data, it started to look like there was the technology, but a very important part of bringing AI to production is the human insights that's derived from all this unstructured data. And companies need a large, secure, and scalable extension to their workforce to make this happen. So iMerit was created to leverage human intelligence to label and enrich data. So we call ourselves a digital data services company, and we power algorithms in machine learning, computer vision, and e-commerce. We have about 1,500 employees. We have 7 centers in India and in U.S. And we have 24/7 operations. And mainly what we do is to be able to actually work with the AI companies to enrich and label their training data to achieve the best results from their algorithms. So that is iMerit. One very interesting, unique differentiation is that the workforce, it's a very young workforce that comes from under-resourced and digitally excluded families. And the beauty of this is that these are young people who have been skilled into becoming the humans in the loop of AI to bring AI to production.
Hi, Radha. This is Emily. I think you've talked about this a little bit, or you're touching on this theme, but I'm curious how you named the company iMerit. And I'm wondering if this has something to do with the diverse workforce that you just mentioned.
So merit, we kind of look at it as mass employment of rural IT-enabled folks. So that was kind of the looking at young men and women in any part, either in India or in the U.S., who come from rural, under-resourced, could be urban poor, who just don't have access to all the technologies that creates the engineers in Silicon Valley. And so the excitement of iMerit is that we have been able to train a workforce of about 1,500 people who come from these diverse backgrounds. By the way, 50% of our workforce are women. Where are you going to find an AI technology company and a sort of services company that has 50% women? So that's the workforce, and the eye, of course, is around innovation, and it's kind of saying thank you to Steve Jobs.
Part of what I love about what you're doing here is it directly addresses some of the concern in the ecosystem about the future of work and about AI removing jobs, and particularly removing jobs from some of those areas that you very directly serve. So you were able to take this AI-enabled universe and this technology-enabled universe and bring opportunity to those underserved populations.
Yeah, so I get asked this a lot. In fact, I was at a Churchill Club talk, and I think we were 6 speakers in AI. And I was the only one who got up there and said, I really want to say that AI, for us, it's creating jobs. And then people all got very interested. And I said it creates jobs for a very inclusive workforce. And we are hiring about 250 to 300 people a quarter. I think what it is that it's different kinds of jobs and different kinds of skills required for the new world of AI-enabled solutions for a variety of societal applications. I spend a lot of time thinking about how do we develop the skills needed in young people to be really productive and have jobs as part of the AI workforce. Let me take a couple of use cases and demonstrate this. The interesting thing about AI is it's creating jobs in areas that perhaps technology didn't create jobs in earlier. So, for example, one of our main applications is in autonomous cars, basically safety with computer vision. So, you know, autonomous cars are not just about self-driving, but about it's making cars safer and drivers more aware of their environment through a number of AI and computer vision driven technologies, gesture recognition, proximity sensors, brake assist, truck traffic, real-time eye detection and tracking. So our workforce in doing the annotation to be able to train the machine algorithms, get trained in, and now I'll use a little technology like bounding boxes, pixel level segmentation and image annotation. And we've worked with literally 20 million images in this area. I bring this up as an example because it requires very minute types of skills with computer vision that are done very well by women. Then we train them through pattern recognition. In fact, we have some skilling that uses machine learning to actually do the skilling. So what we have done is look at the needs for these various uses of machine learning and AI and look at how can we train young people to be able to create this workforce of the future.
Radha, I absolutely love what you've been talking about in terms of blending that human into serving kind of the last mile problem of AI. They can do the algorithms, but they need that translator. They need that image tagging service, et cetera. So this is really incredible what you're doing to support the entire AI ecosystem. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that next use case.
Yes. So you might have seen, if you did a little research on us, that 2 years ago, we were in Sports Illustrated. I think it was one thing that I didn't expect to be in was Sports Illustrated. And the headline said, Chicago Cubs win World Series with AI technology from Kinetrax and iMerit. It was like, wow. So what happened was Kinetrax is Markerless motion capture system, and is basically the need was the accurate and rapidly tagged image to develop 3D player modules of pitchers. And so we used end-to-end process to annotate in-game footage of players, building 3D models of pitchers. And the whole idea was, and we did this over 300 Major League Baseball pitchers, and it was actually used in the Chicago Cubs, the historic, as you all know, 2016 World Series win after, I think, 1906 or something, I don't remember. And it's really interesting. So it was pixel level, looking at annotation of pitchers actually in motion as they pitch the ball.
So this is real time that you're able to tag these?
It's not exactly real time, but motion capture. So the Kinetrax is the motion capture system. And so we would actually take a picture and do it, but as they were in motion. So from that viewpoint, it's real time, but it's not being done as they are playing.
Radha, I'm very impressed with all of the use cases you've mentioned so far. I wonder if you could give us any input about the challenges that you've experienced in deployment and scale of these AI initiatives.
Yes, so we are all about the services in terms of the annotation of the data and training the machine algorithms. So some of the challenges is both the excitement is also the challenge, the excitement being the application of AI in such a variety of different fields. We work in cancer cell categorization, so image tagging for cancer detection training. We work with getting insights from geospatial data. We work in looking at for insurance companies. to be able to look at a variety of different things. It could be automotive damage analysis. It could be damage due to hurricanes and earthquakes and stuff. So the challenge is that training the people to be able to pick up and be able to do the annotation and in many cases, even some creation of models across a variety of use cases. We've had to do a lot of investment in learning and development. In fact, that is one of the key things in how we have these learning curves. We call them the S-curve, and how people move up that value chain is a very important part of what we invest in. And it's a challenge, and also we are actually using in some ways the same technologies that we are annotating to build algorithms. So capacity building of skilled people is both an area of focus for us and, of course, is a challenge as well. So we could start people with, and there's both text images as well as text and image, text data and image data. So you could start with maybe in the text case, normalization, taxonomy, sentiment, natural language processing, moderation, et cetera, in a horizontal way, and then verticalizing it into e-commerce, fintech, and healthcare. Those are our three verticals. Now, if you look at the computer vision side, you're teaching people about tagging, annotation, pixel-level segmentation, maybe even working with LiDAR and video capture of images. So it's this kind of development of the skill sets definitely needs an investment for scaling.
So that's all really fascinating to think about. The horizontals and the verticals, the opportunity to use so many different technologies, the pixel level segmentation, natural language processing. These are really, really different approaches. And of course, you're using humans to do this work. So you're training in a very different sense than we would normally train an algorithm. I'd love to hear a little bit about the technology and the platform that this is based on, the hardware that you're using, the enablement that you're using to be able to support all of this work.
Oh, of course. And one of the reasons I would be on this podcast is all the Intel platforms that we use, right? So we have this platform called the iMerit People Platform. And actually, there are two objectives for it. The first one is it's a people platform in which every one of our contributors actually logs into this platform, regardless of what project or what client they're going to work on. Now, the platform then, that is the way we determine quality and throughput of each contributor, and that's looked at on every eight-hour shift. Many clients we work with are 24/7, but we actually monitor quality and throughput on every project, on every shift, so that if there are issues, we can do gap skilling by the next shift that comes in. It's also the platform in which we capture or codify the instructions or the customer requirements are codified into the platform. And it's also the platform through which we know the skills matching that can take place. So someone is very good at, let's say they've done work with attribute mining or they've done work with NLP for e-commerce. And then when a new project comes in, there is, we call it dynamic rostering, but that's a bit of a stretch. It requires, again, a human in the loop to be able to do that dynamic rostering, but it's a matching system that matches skills with people. So this all comes together. And then with the client data, we work in three ways. Our people can actually work on the client platform. So the client may have an AI platform that we work on. We could work on a platform of somebody who has an AI technology platform. It could be a computer vision tool, or it could be a NLP tool or whatever. And then we have our own tools. There are many clients who come to us and say, here's our data, and we would want to work on your offerings. So those kinds of tools then connect into a workforce API into our people platform, so people can actually work in any of those ways.
What I'm really fascinated by is the fact that you are embodying a truly digital company. you're addressing all kinds of problems, be they sports, be they autonomous driving, be they estimating insurance claims from automobile accidents. You're doing it with a technology-enabled workforce that has a strong social mission, and then you're reflecting that back into the processes that you're using to manage, monitor, and assign work within your own organization. So it's really a beautiful example of how we can use artificial intelligence, how we can use machine learning, and importantly, how we can use humans sort of as the bookends to any of those technology processes to make sure that they're effective and powerful in the real world.
Thank you.
We only have a couple of minutes left. I'd love to know if you can tell me anything about your involvement in the AI Builders program.
So we are a partner of AI Builders, and we are able to both we train our people on some of the technologies in AI Builders, as well as we work with clients to be able to make it easier for them to use your offerings, to use your solutions. So we have these people called solution architects who are very key to the implementation of the solutions with the client. So in a way, you might say they are like a consultant to different technologies or partners we work with. And so we have a person who's well-versed with AI Builders. So it really brings that to life as a solution for clients. I know, for example, we worked with a retail client. We have worked with an e-commerce client, both on the image side and on the NLP side. And I believe we have also worked with some exciting car companies and stuff. Like, I can't mention all of them, but and working with the AI Builders program.
Radha, thank you so much for your time today in the call. Just one final question. Is there a place we can send our listeners to get more information about your company, iMerit?
It would be www.imerit.net.
Radha, thank you so much for your time today. It's been informative and inspiring. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to the next opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
With that, thank you for listening to Intel on AI, and until next time, this is Alexis and Emily.
Alexis, it was so great to hear from Radha about her vision of the future of AI and iMerit's role in that future. Speaking of the future of AI, I know you have some experience in coaching data scientists and how to enter this field. What are your thoughts on how interested data scientists could get experience in more AI projects?
The issue of experience is a really important one. It's hard to hire someone just on a wing and a prayer or on blind faith, but it's difficult to get the opportunity to get that experience all the time. One of the go-to suggestions that I use is to really engage in nonprofits and engage in projects or organizations that may be close to your heart. One of the challenges with good AI is to find a project that's really worth solving, and engaging with a local nonprofit or your community school can be a great data source, and it can be an opportunity to maybe stumble a little bit without quite the same pressure of a deadline while building a portfolio of different methodologies. I've had colleagues and mentees that have been able to cut their teeth in natural language processing or in machine learning and be able to, at the same time, deliver value to something that they really, really care about. So one of my first suggestions in getting that initial project, that first thing in your portfolio of artificial intelligence work, is to find a group or a local nonprofit that really speaks to your heart, that you're pleased to spend the time serving, and do a little bit of experimentation. Run those first couple of projects.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Intel on AI podcast. And thanks so much for lending your insights to that important question, Alexis.
Thank you, Emily. This is a delight. And until next time, this has been Intel on AI.